I like people in education that speak the truth. More people need to. Okay, so there was a big story in the Trib. I was reading this yesterday, and it was about, and I was talking about this last week. There's no correlation there. It was just happenstance, really. And they were talking about funding. They were talking about standardized test scores. They were talking about amount spent per student, right? And I found somebody who speaks the truth, okay? Remember, I was talking about how my kids get this sort of test fatigue and they worry, and it was all for these Keystone tests and things that really don't matter all that much, and about how we over-standardize test our kids. And what's the true measure of that? We're supposed to prepare them for life. So open up this story, and I start reading through it, and let me read you a couple graphs. Kiski Area Superintendent Jason Lohr, for one, believes state test scores are an incomplete assessment of the district's 3,600 students. After struggling with math in the early 2000s, the majority of Kiski students, between 70 and 80%, achieved a proficient of higher score on state tests by 2015. Less than a decade later, though, 2024 Keystone exams results showed 40% of students achieving that mark on the Algebra 1 exam. Lohr is then quoted as saying, "What happened? Did our kids stop knowing how to do math? Or were we not preparing them to be able to take the standardized test and answer the questions that were being asked?" From his standpoint, some of the most valuable measures of student success are not measured by state tests, among them involvement in extracurricular activities, credentials received at a local career and technical center, and post-graduation outcomes. He's also quoted as saying, and this is the hammer, I love this, "Our community says we want our kids ready for life and ready to either enter the workforce or ready to go into post-secondary education. I don't see anybody hanging up their standardized test results in their house. I see them taking pictures of their kids at their first job. I'm seeing a high school diploma hanging there. Those are the things that we celebrate." Let me welcome in Superintendent Lohr right now to the show. Hi, Mr. Lohr. How are you?
Great, Mr. Dunlap. How are you today?
Wonderful. I think you said what a lot of people in education are afraid to say publicly, but I think you speak with logic, and I think that in looking at the statewide standardized tests, I talked about this last week, and I had a lot of parents who say, my kids get test anxiety, and on the other end of it, I don't understand what the fruits of all this labor is. Do you hear that too?
Yeah, we hear it from time to time, and we've got students with test anxiety. We've got, you know, families that really, you know, don't necessarily understand what the point of, you know, sitting for those tests are. But, you know, obviously it's a necessary evil that we've got to participate in as a school in the state. And as educators, we find some value in the test results, but it's not for the kids. It's for how we adjust our curriculum and what, you know, the decisions we make every day, if that makes sense.
No, it certainly does. In doing this, what is, you say, you know, I value a diploma. I value kids getting their first job. I also look at this and say, when they do take standardized tests, that it takes away from valuable teacher and instruction time that I know teachers and instructors really, really value in terms of imparting the lessons onto the kids. And sometimes we wipe out a whole week in taking these standardized tests.
Yeah, 100%. Our month of April is involved in testing, but you know, I think it goes deeper than that, right? You're taking a snapshot of a child taking an assessment for an hour to an hour and a half of a day, and then we're making judgments on a school based on that test. And as I was quoted in the article saying, like, we value the activities and arts and things that our kids are involved in, those industry credentials that translate into real jobs. And our community, you know, our community values that, right? Like it's, you know, what are you producing on the other end that's going to allow my child to be a successful independent adult, when they walk out of your doors, right? And it's not a result of a standardized test. It's the whole picture, right?
Dr. Jason Lohr, Superintendent Kiski Area. Big story in the Trib just the other day about standardized testing and other things. Do you have a think tank or a kind of a feedback caucus or whatever when they do give the Keystone tests, or more so an outlet than talking to me or talking to the Trib? Do educators get together and give feedback about this?
I mean, internally, obviously, we have our discussions, right? Those test results come back in the summer. And basically, we look at those as an autopsy, like, how did our year go, right? I mean, those test results by the time we start school, are old, we look at them the first couple of weeks of school to see, you know, to build a strength profile of our kids. Where are they, you know, how are they doing in math? How are they doing in reading? But again, what we talk about is like, yeah, we take that assessment, but I don't think anybody in education agrees that standardized testing writing is going to make for a good writer, right? That happens in the classroom, the day-to-day 180 grind with the teacher, with their peers, looking over, you know, how they're writing and pushing them to be better, which again is how we do get better, right? We talk about athletics. You've got and our band. Our band is one of the hardest working groups here on campus, where they've got to learn to balance their time between their activities and their academics, which is a valuable life lesson that's never going to be measured on any standardized test. You know, I've got two boys at home who are in school right now in college, and I tell them all the time, Colin, I say, listen, you don't have to be the smartest person. You have to have a work ethic, and if you have a work ethic and that's building you through your experiences in school and also with parents and families, like, you're going to be successful if you develop that grit, right? And that's really our you know, our approach here at Kiskeri School District is, yes, we take the test, we do that, and it's not about not wanting accountability. We welcome accountability. It's the right kind of accountability, and our community does a great job of letting us know when we're doing things really well, and they're really great at letting us know in areas that we need to improve, and we welcome that, and our school board is absolutely open to that, and just a fantastic group of people that are community-centered, community-oriented, and wanting their kids and all kids to reach their full potential.
So in the education community, then, it is affirmed by a lot of people in it, then, I guess, that there is a delineation between being able to take a test well and being able to grasp a lesson well. Those are two different things, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, because that seems to be the heart of all of this. And I know it is the heart of all of it. And I don't want to speak for all parents, but in this job, I'm just a parent. And it seems to be that sometimes we are able to program kids to be able to take a test, and that's not an accurate sort of function to grasping the material. I think the latter is what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah, listen, I don't think, I haven't done exhaustive research, but I don't think that there's any research out there that I've seen that says, hey, if you do well on a standardized test, it's going to translate in being successful in life, right? Being a community member, a great employee, a great colleague. Like, you know, I mean, yeah, it measures things. It measures our curriculum and are we doing what we need to do? But again, as I said in the paper, when Quincy Reese reached out for the thing, I said, this is a very complex issue because standardized test scores don't necessarily equate to a great educational experience for kids. You know, it doesn't necessarily build capacity. It measures a set of standards that it sets out to do, but that it's not comprehensive enough to label a school as doing a great job or not doing a great job based on a test we take in the spring.
Last thing, and I'll leave you with this and ask you this last question. Somebody reached out to me not long ago, and they said, it's an excuse by lazy adults, and this is how they put it, not me, that kids are different now. And somebody that's been in education a long time, they said, kids are the same in this way. They want strong adults to be able to guide them, and if you have strong adults, they will follow and they'll absorb. Do you find that to be true?
Listen, kids, I've been in this district for 27 years, and the kids are awesome, and I don't see very much change between when I started in this business in 1999 and today. And absolutely, they gravitate towards adults. They gravitate and rise to the challenge. You know, I hear all the time, kids can't communicate today. Oh, no, they're great communicators, and they're able to communicate in ways that I couldn't even dream of when I was their age. So I think it's a lot of painting with a broad brush, and I think if you talk to our teachers, they would say that, you know, our kids are absolutely willing to step up and accept the challenge you know, as they have been, you know. And when I say that, sometimes people don't believe me. They're like, oh, but kids these days. I absolutely disagree with that, you know, disagree with that statement. You know, kids, what I tell people they need to say is these kids today matter, not kids these days, right? Like, it's we got to go up in there and, you know, roll our sleeves up and reach them wherever they are and take them to the next level, right? I mean, and just have them reach their full potential so that, you know, we have confidence when they leave us that they've got the skills to be able to compete.
Dr. Jason Lohr, Superintendent, Kiske Area. Dr. Lohr, I'm glad you're in education. You're a good man. You're doing the right things. Thank you for joining me for a couple minutes today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Good, good stuff. Fantastic stuff from him. I agree 1,000%. That's a hammer quote that he had in the Trib. Our community says we want our kids ready for life and ready to either enter the workplace or ready to go to post-secondary education. I don't see anybody hanging up their standardized test results in their house. I see them taking pictures of their kids at their first job. I'm seeing a high school diploma hanging there. That's what we celebrate. That's somebody who's speaking the truth, saying things other people think but don't want to say out loud. I love it. I do. Good stuff. What do you make of that from Dr. Laurette Kiske? Standardized tests. I know there are a lot of parents out there listening. I found it to be spot on. I don't know if I've talked to anybody in education that was more spot on. Let's do away with the antiquated stuff. Let's get with the times. Seriously. I mean, let's get with the times. Great, great stuff from him. It just was. 866-391-1020. That's 866-391-1020. We'll talk to Rich Fitzgerald in just a couple minutes. Brody in Swissvale's been on hold for a while. I've got a lot going on, but I always squeeze in Brody. Yeah. Hi, Brody. What's up?
You always got to squeeze me in, man. I'll tell you what, thanks for texting me back. I was laughing. I was like, oh, my God, Peg.
Don't say it.
No. You never will set the button with me, I promise, okay?
Gotcha.
Never. Okay. Just tell her to say mess around. You know, I don't mess around, right?
Yes.
We want Peg to call in. You can't say a dirty word because you'll get fined by the SEC.
Yes.
So there you go. But anyway, what'd you do this weekend, Colin?
What did I do? A whole lot of nothing, which I'm all right with, okay. Because that was probably the last weekend of nothing, considering activities, wrestling, this, that, the other stuff. What did you do, Brody, more importantly?
I didn't go to Light Up Night. I avoid it like the plague. Didn't Light Up Night used to be Friday nights when I was a limo driver? I remember I used to call
off. You know what? My wife said the same exact thing the other day when we were talking about
it. I have a good memory.
Yes.
Yeah.
My wife said that. She goes, didn't Light Up Night used to be Friday and then people would stay in town and have a beer or whatever and then their families would come down and meet them and all that kind of stuff?
That's right.
I think you're right about that.
Well, I have a pretty good, I have a very good memory for being born in 1968. I know what's going on and everything. And I want to squeeze it all in here because I love your show and everything. And I'll tell you what, on Friday, I called in late and Margo gets on and goes, I'm sorry, Brody, Colin is getting out the door. I'm like, my God, tell him, have a great weekend. And, I was like, got to try to get it in and everything. Okay, second subject, the Post-Gazette, come on. They're terrible journalism. Come on. News is supposed to be unbiased. That's why I tune in to KDKA. Unbiased journalism, right?
Yes.
Is that why they're knuckleheads?
They made it like they were some sort of coal miners up on the New York, Pennsylvania border that were so oppressed they were living in a company town or something. Not the case.
Well, I hope you're having dinner with your family or with other either in your house. Have a very warm and beautiful Thanksgiving.
You too, Brody. Thank you for the kind words. What a nice man Brody is. He is a very nice man. We'll go from one nice man to the other. We'll talk to Rich Fitzgerald in just a little bit. We got a whole lot to cover. Top of the hour. I do want to get back into the topic I started with. Is some of Trump's mojo kind of slipping away? Is he losing some momentum that he gained? We'll dive into that in just a little bit. Certainly what you need to know. Maybe Larry should do a segment on what the deer need to know. You think they know? You think they know it's about to be go time? I don't know. But anyway, coming up right now, we'll talk to, from the Southwestern PA Commission, the man in charge, that's Rich Fitzgerald. Hi, Rich. How are you?
Good afternoon, Colin. How are you?
Oh, wonderful. We'll get to the airport in just a moment because we're about a week in now, maybe some quick thoughts about it. But you know what? A story I don't think enough people are talking about in our area is, and it hits close to home for you, not far from your office, they finally, I don't want to say got rid of, but the evolution of that Consumer Fresh Produce building and the living down there, more places to live in the Strip. It seems endless what's going on, Rich.
You're 100% right, and we're talking about major increase in housing. I think at that Consumer Produce, I think that I read 500 units mm-hmm. are going to go in, or 450, something like that. And then right across the street on 21st and Railroad, like another 250, and on and on and on. It's been, you drive through the Strip, you just see all of a sudden it was a vacant lot. You know, a building popped up with, you know, a couple hundred units of townhouses, apartments, condos, et cetera. It's a desirable place, and it's going to be interesting when it's all said and done how the traffic is handled.
And here's the other part. The first shoe to drop in all of that, though, is Consumer Produce was able to find a new place and stay in the county and go to Braddock. Again, enough people aren't talking about this. That's a gigantic operation that's been there for a long time. It's a big business in Allegheny County and was able to stay in Allegheny County.
Absolutely. It's been a hallmark of that community for years. And, you know, going back to what the Strip District was, basically what the terminal building is, you know, was where the produce was dropped off and distributed, et cetera, where all the grocers from around the region would come in and get their wares and leave. And the consumer produce warehouse was absolutely huge and a great facility that so many people used for many years. But the way that the property values in the Strip District have changed, they can find a higher and better use of that property and then move into something that, as you said, kept it into the county and kept those jobs here in the county.
Let me ask you this. When things evolve like that, when they change, much like the Strip has changed, how much talk is there? Because you're in these meetings, these planning meetings, these zoning meetings. How much talk is there about green space and about parks and about things like that? Because it's one thing to get the 35-year-old, you know, or 28-year-old single guy, or maybe the young couple, but is there a vested interest to get people with kids?
Yes, for a couple reasons. And I think, you know, you've seen what you see a lot with kids is people move where there's the school district is desirable. And we have 43 school districts in Allegheny County. Some of them are really, really good, and some of them struggle. So I think, you know, you see a lot of the population shift, the demographic shift kind of moves towards some of those areas. But yes, green space and quality of life is really, really important. But also, as you know, people have kids, people have families, other things start to matter. And education is certainly one of those things people move towards.
Now let's talk about the airport. Rich Fitzgerald joining now. This is great. We have this conversation every week. We're about a week in. I have heard a ton of positive about the functionality of the airport once you're there. The one negative I keep hearing, I don't think people were prepared for the spike in parking, and I don't think people were prepared in how parking was going to be different. Have you heard any of that same stuff?
Yeah, a little bit of that. And the parking is different, and it's much more convenient. I'm going to go back to when we went from Greater Pitt 33 years ago, to Pittsburgh International Airport. In the old days, and I sound like an old timer, but bear with me. Mm-hmm. You know, you could park so much closer to your gate. It was closer to downtown in Oakland and other parts of the region. When Pittsburgh International opened up, it was open for a hub. And what that meant was, you know, it was more inconvenient for the Pittsburgher. You parked way further away, and you had to walk a long way to get to the people mover, and then you'd go to ticketing, and you'd go down into the train, et cetera, et cetera. It added about 20 to 30 minutes to your time to what we used to have at Greater Pitt. We were kind of conditioned that was the way it had to be. We're getting corporate headquarters. We're going to get 10,000 to 15,000 jobs. Pilots, flight attendants, et cetera, et cetera. And then TSA came, and that, of course, changed a whole lot of things in the inconvenience of having to travel. I think what the new airport gives all of us, is we get that 20 to 30 minutes back. You're parking closer. You're being dropped off closer, whether it's with an Uber, whether it's with a friend or family member, whether it's taking the 28X, whatever it might be, you're so much closer that they've changed the dynamic of how the airport will operate. And I think people will enjoy that. I get the other option. You can certainly park further away and probably get the same rate that you had before, but you lose some of that convenience. So it's a trade-off on how that goes.
Do the people at the airport and the people involved in this decision, do they like rideshare, or do they look at it as an opportunity lost as someone who didn't park there?
No, I think what they've always wanted to do, and you know, when I was a county executive, met with Christina all the time, we wanted to give people as many options as they could. In fact, we were one of the very first airports to allow Uber and Lyft and the rideshare companies to come in. There was some resistance when that happened. And I'm going to go back. It's probably about a decade ago, in which, you know, Yellow Cab or whoever it was at the time kind of had a little bit of a monopoly, and they pushed back. And they pushed back around the country for Uber and Lyft and those type of things. And again, we were one of the very first ones to do it. And I think it's another option. You can have a rental car. You could take the 28X, take the bus, PRT. Obviously, a lot of people get picked up by friends and family members. So there's a lot of options, and rideshare, which has now become certainly accepted in many places in around society, is used.
You go back further. You go back to when Jim Sinnott and those guys used to smoke cigarettes driving yellow cabs, Rich.
I was a yellow cab driver, and I remember at Great Crater Pit in the late 70s, early 80s, and we would sit in that lot, and you'd wait. You got in line, and you waited, and sometimes the line was so long, you would sit there and play cards or do other, you know, other activities. And again, this was before smartphones. So you didn't have that kind of – you could read the paper or do other things on that. But, yeah, we would sit there at Crater Pit, and you were right near the gates. Everything was so much closer, and again – The Pittsburgh International Airport was built for a hub. It was built as a corporate headquarters. And then, of course, 9/11, TSA, all the things that made flying so much less convenient than it had been previously.
And those yellow cab drivers may or may not have had NFL parlay sheets, too, with college games on them.
May or may not. Before you could bet on your phone, which has made it so convenient now, yes, you went to the right person, and you had a little slip of paper, and you handed in your bet.
Yes, you know, you ripped off.
It was a more simple time. Let's just leave it at that.
It was. You ripped off the bottom. You circled the numbers, and you kept the top part. I just heard about that. I don't really know anything about it.
You never did that stuff in Sharpsburg, because no. I know Sharpsburg would never allow something like that to happen. That was in those other neighborhoods that you had things like that would occur.
Yeah, we read about it and heard about it. So great stuff, Rich. As always, we'll talk again next week. Have a happy holiday, and we'll talk next week.
You as well. Have a happy Thanksgiving with you and the family, and we'll talk to you next Monday.
All right, my man, Rich Fitzgerald. I love Rich. He drove a yellow cab. That, you know, I know some guys, some old timers. I'm not calling Rich that, but guys older than him that drove a yellow cab. The shenanigans those guys were in the middle of back in the day. He's right. It was a simpler life, and man, even just give me like a week to live back then, and it would have been something else. I just want to experience that. If you want the full unadulterated what Peggy said. Now, a bunch of people texted me, and I texted them back. Probably 60 people. So I just copy and pasted what she said and just replied to everybody. But it's now on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, on KDKA's, and also on my personal one. So, and it's unedited because it's the internet. So you can find out what Peggy said that I had to hit the dump button a little earlier today. Just a nice lady in the middle of a conversation about hitting a deer. And she unleashed one that was on the fence that we had to dump. So, all right, here's the deal. I go over all these stories on the web. Or excuse me, on the wire. And I'll listen to them, see what's good, what's bad, maybe use some for fodder for the show. Other ones I dismiss. I heard one today, and I wonder if we're overstating influence. If this is a story, I don't want to say that's trying too hard, but one that you look at and you listen to and you go, yeah, it really doesn't have that much impact. The great Jim Krasula covers this.
The stars are lighting it up again. Cigarettes, that is. Nearly half of movies that premiered last year included scenes with cigarettes, cigars, and other tobacco products. That was up about 10% from 2023, according to the public health nonprofit called Truth Initiative. The trend worries anti-smoking advocates who fear a reversal of the years-long decline in U.S. smoking rates. Jim Krasula, CBS News.
The great Jim Krasula. Do you think that people see people smoking in movies and it compels them to want to try a smoke? That seems so Chesterfield's 1948 or whatever. I don't know. It just feels like a stretch. Now, the numbers are right. 10%, it's up. The trend worries anti-smoking advocates. Yeah, okay, fine. But I don't know. Maybe I'm naive. Perhaps I'm wrong, but I find it hard to believe that some kid's going to go, I'm at a movie, they smoked, you know what, soon as I get home, I'm going out in the woods with some Marlboro Lights. Let's hit it. I just, it feels like a big stretch to me, considering the avenues with which they can be exposed to everything everywhere else. He might be right. He might be right, and they should be concerned with this, but I don't know. I can't believe in 2025 there are still people who smoke. I can't. All right, top of the hour. Is Trump losing any momentum he gained? I do want to talk about that. We'll also hear from Cam Hayward before we get out of here today.